Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Tonight on SportsCenter at 6, an hour ahead of Isaiah Thomas's long-awaited Cavs debut, what's the one thing that LeBron's not worried about in IT's return? The latest on the NFL coaching carousel. Is the Lions job the king of all vacancies? And where things stand with John Gruden and the Raiders? Plus, 11 times Nick Saban has squared off against his former assistant, and 11 times he's won. Why the college football championship won't be any different.
That man is a father.
Whole lot of SEC ball coming right in Atlanta.
Here's Michael Smith and Jamel Hill.
Well, look at this. The dynamic duo is back together again. Happy New Year's, everyone. What a day in sports. Jay Gruden, he made some comments about Kirk Cousins that certainly seemed to insinuate that Cousins likely is on his way out.
Word?
But first, let's tell you who isn't going anywhere anytime soon. The Bengals announced that Marvin Lewis is returning as their head coach and is signed through 2019. Now, this comes after there were reports that Lewis was going to pursue other coaching opportunities. But I guess when it comes down to it, the Bengals and Lewis just can't seem to quit each other. Lewis is the NFL's second longest active tenured head coach, behind only Bill Belichick, and his 125 career wins are the most in Bengals franchise history. The knock on Lewis, though, has always been his lack of postseason success, as Cincinnati is 0-7 in the playoffs during his tenure, the most losses without a win by any head coach in NFL history. And with that, we welcome in the man who knows it all, Mr. Adam Schefter. Now, Adam, you reported that Marvin Lewis was looking elsewhere, as I said a minute ago, and the sense seemed to be that his time was up there in Cincinnati. So why did the Bengals decide to stick with Lewis despite his poor playoff record?
Well, the initial report was that he was planning to move on from the Bengals, and I can tell you that the coaches on that staff were completely shocked that he got the extension done, but they're very pleased that he's back because of what he's meant to that organization and all that he's brought to that particular city. I think a lot of people thought Marvin Lewis was going to be leaving Cincinnati after the season. What happened is, after the season, he was going to sit down with the Bengals owner, Mike Brown. That was always the plan. And as they sat down and began to hash out the issues, it was clear that they both felt that they were useful and helpful for each other, and they were able to figure out a two-year extension. Look, Hugh Jackson wasn't going to be available to come back to Cincinnati. Jay Gruden wasn't going to be available to come back to Cincinnati. Marvin had his own concerns that were addressed during these meetings. I think there was some sentiment within that organization that the assistant coaches whose contracts were up were not being treated in a fair and appropriate way. I'm sure that was one of the issues that was discussed the past couple of days. And again, even though there were plans to move on, there always was going to be the idea that after the season, Marvin Lewis and Mike Brown would sit down to see if they could hash out any differences. And they did, and plans changed, and Marvin gets a two-year extension.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your insight, but you sit tight.
Moral of the story, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you with, so the Bengals are no longer in limbo. Let's hop aboard the NFL head coaching carousel, shall we? A reminder of which teams have vacancies at the moment. We'll discuss the most attractive of them later in the show. But right now, let's get the lowdown again from Adam on who might be on the come up. You know, Adam, for a dynasty, the Patriots have enjoyed an enviable run of continuity when it comes to their coordinators. What are the chances, though, that they lose one or both of Josh McDaniels and or Matt Patricia this year?
Michael, higher than they've ever been before. Because in other years, Matt Patricia last year interviewed with the Chargers and the Rams. Josh McDaniels has taken a series of interviews over the years and has never been able to be persuaded to leave Foxborough. But this is the year that both coordinators look poised to leave Foxborough. Both are in demand. Both are going to have interview opportunities later this week. Both, I think, ultimately will be offered jobs somewhere. And it's time, I think, that they're going to look at these jobs as realistic landing spots. And again, for the first time in a long time, I think there's a sense that these guys are willing to leave, which hasn't always been the case, that they are ready to become head coaches. And because of that, I think there's a real possibility, certainly greater than there's been in any recent year, that the Patriots are going to lose both of their coordinators, Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels.
And I'll just go ahead and say it's an impossibility that Bill Belichick has not prepared for this very real possibility to lose both those guys. Now let's kind of bring it full circle, semicircle, if you will. Now to Marvin Lewis's one-time QB in Cincinnati. First Cardinals head coach Bruce Arians steps down. Now QB Carson Palmer has retired. The 38-year-old saying after 15 years, he just knows now is the time to call it a career. A career that saw him go from Heisman Trophy winner and first overall pick of the Bengals in 03 to retiring from Cincinnati before being dealt to the Raiders and finally enjoying one final career resurgence in the desert under Arians. Adam Palmer finishes his career top 12 in both touchdown passes and passing yards. Of course, limited to 7 games this season because of a broken arm. Now, that leaves Larry Fitzgerald. Adam Arians has already said today that the next head coach will play a huge part in determining whether the future Hall of Famer comes back for a 15th season himself. What do you know about Larry Fitzgerald's plans beyond this season?
Michael, I could tell you that I think the feeling within the organization on Sunday when they played their final regular season game and won in Seattle was that Bruce Arians was going to retire. Carson Palmer was going to retire. And Larry Fitzgerald was planning to come back. Now, again, those things change. But I think he has the chance to become second all-time receiver in NFL in catches. And again, I think the situation with Larry Fitzgerald is the plan, even with Bruce Arians and Carson Palmer leaving the desert this year, is for Larry Fitzgerald to play another year. I think that's the situation. Now, look, again, we've seen it before. Plans change. But the plan right now, I believe, is for Larry Fitzgerald to come back and play no matter who the head coach is, no matter who the quarterback is. Larry Fitzgerald doesn't sound as if he's ready to pack it in just yet.
Doesn't look like he's done either. Whoever is the coach and quarterback, the plan better be to keep getting him the ball. 109, 107, and 109 catches in his last 3 years. So if this is it, he goes out at the top of his game. Adam Schefter always on his game. Appreciate it, bro.
Thank you, Michael.
It was so many points in the rehab process where it literally mentally drained me. I've never had to play the waiting game and not know when I'm going to be able to play again. So to know that it's coming is definitely a relief.
All right, after months of anticipation, that's right, IT finally will make his season debut for the Cavs tonight against Portland. Now, Thomas has been recovering from a hip injury he suffered in last season's Eastern Conference Finals before he was traded to Cleveland. Now, Thomas will come off the bench and will be on a minutes restriction. As you might imagine, this is glorious news in Cavs land. Here's Tyler.
Just mentally, you have to get over it. And I've been in a situation where I was out 10 months and I was scared to play when I first came back, but you know, he's going to be okay. Just seeing how he played these last few scrimmages of playing with speed and pace and getting into the paint and making plays. And that's all I wanted to see, just, you know, see if his speed and his burst was there, which he really was.
All right, the Cavs are desperate for the help of Isaiah Thomas. Cleveland's starting point guard ranked 29th in the NBA in both points and assists per game and last in minutes per game. They've started 5 different players at the position, including LeBron James and shooting guards J.R. Smith and Amon Shumpert. Now joining us now, Cavs insider Dave McMiniman. Now, Dave, we know that tonight they plan to bring him off the bench. What's the plan for IT going forward? How do they plan to fully integrate him into their system?
Well, Jamel, Mike, you first start with a minute restriction for him tonight. I had a source tell me it would be somewhere in the 8 to 12 minute range. I guess he came off feeling pretty good after the scrimmage on Monday, so it could be actually around 20 minutes tonight. But he will not play Wednesday in that marquee matchup against the Boston Celtics. They're holding him out of back-to-backs. The good news, as they progress him through this entry into the Cavs lineup, is that Cavs coach Ty Lue said he will put him in the starting lineup the next time he plays, which will be likely Saturday on the road against the Orlando Magic if he comes out of tonight's debut feeling okay.
Now, Dave, just real quick, are there any lingering concerns about how this injury or recovery from this injury might impact him going forward?
Well, the concern, Jamel, is that he hasn't really taken major contact in the 3 scrimmages he's gone through. Ty Lue actually kind of wants him to get hit, go to the deck, get up, you know, brush his shoulders off and say, oh, I'm okay to play. He thinks that will remove a mental block that Isaiah will have to deal with through this process. And Ty Lue said he went through the same thing personally when he went through a microfracture injury years ago when he was a player. And he thinks that even though you never like a coach to want his player to get hit, he actually thinks that type of hit will be good for Isaiah Thomas in the long term.
All right, Dave, thanks so much for joining us and giving us your insight. look, I call this water is wet news. John Gruden, he's admitted that he's a candidate for the Raiders coaching job in a story that was first reported by Adam Schefter. Gruden told the Mercury News that his understanding was that the Raiders are interviewing candidates this week and will let candidates know of a decision sometime early next week. Now, gather around the campfire, boys and girls, and let me tell you about that time John Gruden was a head coach. He spent 11 seasons as a NFL head coach with Oakland and Tampa Bay, but he hasn't been a head coach in nearly a decade. He took the Raiders to the AFC title game in 2000 and was actually traded to the Bucs 2 years later for $8 million in cash and 4 draft picks, including 2 in the first round. Gruden repaid his old team by beating them, of course, in the Super Bowl during his first season.
So that wasn't necessary?
Apparently so. Josina Anderson joining us now. Now, Josina, even though Gruden, he hinted that there were other candidates that were being interviewed by the Raiders, questions have been raised, of course, about whether or not there is interest in terms of the Rooney Rule in other candidates besides John Gruden. Now, John Wooten, he talked about this earlier today, so let's take a look at some of his comments to Mike Sando. What he said was that he trusted the judgment and integrity of owner Mark Davis and GM Reggie McKenzie. Wooten also added, "We have to be pleased with what we have seen in the last 14 to 15 years in the league. We all have concerns, but things are better than they were before. We have seen that in every phase." Now, you've talked to some minority coaches around the league. So what do they think about this situation and whether or not they really have a legitimate shot at even attaining this opportunity?
You're right. I was interested in asking minority candidates around the league, you know, what would you do in this situation if you get a call? And so I talked to Eric Studisville. You know, he's the former assistant head coach of the Broncos, obviously just lost his job, and running backs coach as well. And he said, "Listen, I would love to." He said, "If they give me a call, this is my opportunity to get in front of them and wow them." He said, "They wouldn't know me otherwise if I don't actually talk to them." So I thought that that was interesting. He said, "There are 32 flavors. I'm trying to be one of them, and hopefully they will like me." Absolutely. That's Stooge, right? And but then I also talked to Steve Wilks, who's the defensive coordinator for the Panthers, and I said, "How do you feel about it?" And he said, "Well, in theory, you know, I understand why people want to get exposure and get their name out there, right? But," he said, "my situation is a little bit differently because I have teams requesting me, obviously, for jobs with the Lions, the Colts, and the Giants." And he said, "I don't want to just be a box that you can just check off."
Right.
If that job is
that
going to, if that job is going to John Gruden, then let him have it. So he was a little bit indifferent when it came, and I understand that, but there's a lot of talk and people feel like this is a sham situation, right? Because John Gruden's already lined up for this job. But I think it's important to underline why this was created in the first place.
Right.
Remember in 2002, Tony Dungy and also Dennis Green were not getting a fair shake in terms of losing their jobs even after having winning records. And if you remember Marvin Lewis, now you just talked about him in the last segment, he could not get a job to save his life in 2000, 2001, 2002, even though he had a top five defense, and it was only that he got a job once the Rooney Rule was instituted in 2003. So there are people like the Todd Bowles, like the Mike Tomlins, like the Ron Riveras, who this has helped.
The point is the process.
Right.
Okay, and to each his own when it comes to how you feel about it. But here's a little secret, which you know very well.
All right.
9 out of 10 times, they violate the spirit of the Rooney Rule. It's all to check off the box. It's all to comply with the process. It becomes an issue when it either gets out earlier than it should, or they clumsily go about it to where people are like, "Wait a second, why didn't you at least go through the process, give the illusion that you're going through the process?" Because they're not coming to this with completely open minds. You mentioned the Broncos, and it reminded me of something.
Okay.
So John Elway just recommitted, at least for this year, to Vance Joseph.
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Justine.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, wasn't Vance Joseph somebody that Elway interviewed before he gave the job to Kubiak? Am I correct about that?
Okay.
So that impression, that lasting impression, to your point, about getting in front of somebody, benefited him when it came time to replacing Gary Kubiak.
Yes.
So even if Gruden is earmarked for this job now, what's the alternative is what I'm saying.
Right.
Because if they don't have to interview you at all, guess what they're not going to do?
Interview you at all. Yeah. And also sometimes it doesn't pay dividends immediately.
That's
right?
What I mean about Vance Joseph.
Right. And Todd Bowles was out in that circuit for years and years and years before he got the head coaching job with the Jets. Ron Rivera, who obviously talks about Jerry Richardson and all the things that have been going down there. But he says, "I was out there for 9 interviews and the man gave me a job as a minority." So something that you want to underline, too. So sometimes it doesn't happen immediately, but it has benefits down the road. So, and I understand people and the talk about it.
And obviously, it's, there's different circumstances, but understand what I'm saying when I say this. Because they've earmarked it for John Gruden, there are a lot of qualified coaches of other persuasions who are also being denied an opportunity to get that job. They have other opportunities elsewhere, more plentiful, don't get me wrong, but they've already decided it's John Gruden. So anybody interviewing or anybody that's interested in that job, too late, it's already
his. And it's not just for the head coaching, it's also for the front office opportunities.
They need this process, though. Yeah, it's not completely broken.
Yes, and also you're trying to break up that rhythm of just wanting to bring in somebody that you're
that
just
comfortable
with.
Absolutely.
That you want to, you know, have to work.
Your agent's
or what have you.
I believe that was the case with Mike Tomlin, right? That was not Pittsburgh's first choice. I think it was Ron Rivera.
Well, they interviewed Ron Rivera. That satisfied the Rooney Rule. He was a defensive coordinator for 1 year with Ron. And then he got that job after just being the defensive coordinator for 1 year.
Right.
And so he did make that impression. And maybe Eric Studer will do that with the Giants. You never know.
All right. We'll come back to Jay Gruden in a second. But meanwhile, no vacancy in Green Bay because with Ted Thompson transitioning away from the GM position he held for 13 seasons into a senior advisor role, speculation immediately and predictably turned to the status of head coach Mike McCarthy coming off the first postseason without the Packers in 9 years. But Packers president Mark Murphy said today that Mike is his man. He's Green Bay's coach. To that end, during the regular season, the Packers extended McCarthy through the 2019 season, a move first reported by our Rob Domofsky. And that, ladies and gentlemen, that resume is why continuity is the name of the game in Green Bay. Not to mention you got a quarterback named Aaron Rodgers, who I'm sure has an affinity for Mike McCarthy. Coached the Packers for 12 seasons, compiling the NFL's third best record in that span. Rob Domofsky, I noticed the qualifying language in your lead on ESPN.com today. You said in an offseason of significant changes, the Packers should have stability at the head coaching position. Now, even though President Mark Murphy says the new GM will have say over the head coach, isn't it safe to assume and take him at his word that McCarthy isn't going anywhere?
Yeah, there's no question about that, Michael, that they want Mike McCarthy to be their guy. 8 straight years in the playoffs. They missed it this year, obviously, but the circumstances, as you mentioned, about Rodgers and the collarbone. But it's also important that when you hire a general manager, that you give him the full authority to hire and fire the head coach. It's the way things have been done around here for a long time, basically ever since Ron Wolf became the general manager in 1991 and hired Mike Holmgren. That's been the recipe for success here. So it's a little bit of an unusual situation in the sense that, yes, they gave Mike McCarthy an extension so that he would not be a lame duck coach going into 2018. And part of that reason, too, is he's got to hire a defensive coordinator, Michael, after firing Dom Capers, and it's really hard to attract a quality candidate to come here if your coach is going to be gone in a year. So that all went into it. But they're going to sign a general manager, hire a general manager, whether it's someone from the inside, Elliot Wolf, Brian Gutekunst, or Russ Ball, or somebody from the outside, if they could get John Schneider or Reggie McKenzie, who used to work here and are now GMs at other places. And whoever that GM is going to have a longer contract than Coach Mike McCarthy does. They've always liked to mirror those two contracts so that they ran concurrently. But that's not going to be the case right now. So they're still, even though McCarthy has the extension, it's still going to be a little bit of a pressure on him coming this year.
No question about it. Rob Domofsky from Green Bay, we appreciate it.
All right, meanwhile, the other Gruden, as in Jay, also made some news today. Washington finished 7-9, and at his season-ending press conference today, let's just say Gruden didn't have the highest praise for Kirk Cousins, who just finished his second season on a franchise tag, and there is considerable speculation that Cousins will play elsewhere next season. Here's what Gruden said.
Kirk had his flashes where he's really good from a consistent standpoint over the course of 16 games. You know, we're 7-9. Did some great things, threw for over 4,000 yards and 29 touchdowns, I believe. So, you know, I think he's a very, very good quarterback without a doubt. But as far as getting us over the hump from 7-9 to winning division with all the injuries we had, I think he competed, did some good things.
Jay Gruden also made some news today along with his brother. Washington finished 7-9, and at his season-ending press conference today, let's just say Gruden didn't have the highest praise for Kirk Cousins, who just finished his second season on a franchise tag, and there's considerable speculation that Cousins will play elsewhere next season. A very pointed comments from him, John Keim, and it kind of sounds like Jay Gruden could take or leave Kirk Cousins. Is that a fair assessment?
Jamel, I think that's very fair, and I think for a couple reasons. One, Jay Gruden has always been a fan of Colt McCoy, so I think he feels confident what he could do in his offensive system, and Gruden believes in his offensive system. I think the biggest reason, though, Jamel, is finances. When you look at the team this year, they had a lot of injuries, but I think if you're going to pay a guy at a certain level, which they need to pay Cousins, then I think you'd want more consistent, high-level quality play, especially down the stretch. He had a couple clunker games. So while they like Cousins, the question is, if you pay him a certain amount, can you build the sort of roster around him, not just to win next year, but to sustain that winning? And I'll be honest, I think Cousins would want to know that as well, because I don't think he wants to sign somewhere where a team can't do that. But I think the finances would be a big reason why the Redskins could say, if he goes, then we're just going to build around the rest of the roster and fortify that quarterback position with strengths elsewhere.
All right. Thank you, John. We appreciate you joining us.
New win to SportsCenter on this Tuesday. Nick Saban is upset, which is the case any day in NY. But as is the case more often than not, he's not PO without a point, perturbed about the quick turnaround from the college football playoff semifinal games and the championship games, saying that it's difficult to come off a bowl game with only 7 days to prepare. Said it wasn't until after 1 a.m. that they began packing up to leave the Sugar Bowl.
This turnaround is very difficult to come from a bowl game and just have 7 days to prepare. I mean, they're coming from the West Coast. We're coming from New Orleans. You know, then we got to be someplace else on Friday. I think that some kind of way, somebody's got to think about the players a little bit when it comes to these games and not just what's convenient for the media or TV or whatever.
All right, Nick Saban, not the only one ticked off, having already declared themselves national champions after beating Auburn in the Peach Bowl. UCF athletic director Danny White told Dan Le Batard earlier that the school will have a parade.
This is awesome.
To celebrate their self-proclaimed title and undefeated season. Now, the Knights' outgoing coach, Scott Frost, also had a strong response to UCF not being in the college football playoff.
It looked like a conscious effort to me to make sure that they didn't have a problem. If they put us too high and a couple teams ahead of us lost, they don't know, now we got to put them in the playoff. These guys deserve everything they get, and they deserve more credit from the committee than what they got.
You deserve credit, ma'am. I know it's been a while since you've done television, but do you remember we were doing the rankings on a Tuesday, mm-hmm. and out of protest,
I put in
you had UCF at
right.
number four. Now, you're Orlando bias aside.
Right, and having taught there before.
Exactly. You also hate the SEC. So, do you have a problem with the way the playoffs have played out so far? No UCF, two SEC teams in the title game.
I do, and I'm also, it's interesting because I have a problem with not only how it played out. I'm also not one of those people, as you know, that is for a playoff expansion. Look, it's a tough choice. Sometimes you have to make them. But it's just, I don't hate the SEC, but the SEC gets the benefit of the doubt in every situation, everyone. And I was so happy that UCF beat the team that beat two of the teams that were left in the playoffs. Because, look, again, The wins and losses can't count the same for SEC schools, and it works that way for them all the time.
With all due respect, you can't use the same argument you use after the final selections were announced, because after you saw what Alabama did to Clemson, I thought Ohio State deserved to be in. Right. And yes, deserve does have something to do with mm-hmm. it. I thought Ohio State should have been that 14. After seeing what Alabama did to Clemson, I'm like, okay, they got it right. I'm fine with an all-SEC final, because if it's supposed to be decided on the field, those two teams made such statements in those games, both Georgia with the comeback and Alabama by dominating Clemson, so I'm cool with the
and
best
Alabama
two teams
dominating this
conference.
Season, to be fair.
Now, back to UCF for a second, which I'm all for the parade. Take it back to the poll era. Back to UCF for a second. The whole thing, you know what it proves? The whole thing is a fugazi. It's a fugazi. You know what a fugazi is?
It goes
left, goes right, goes up and down. It's fairy dust. Nobody knows anything. Least of all the committee. It goes to show that when they had UCF at 12 and in the teens all this time, that they have no idea who's good enough to beat somebody else. So correct. This is a statement saying that no matter how far you expand, you still may not get the best teams, because once you play, who knows what can happen? And UCF, talented, well-coached, good enough to beat Auburn, does not mean that their schedule and their resume was more deserving of, say, Alabama's because four. Who are you leaving out?
Right. That's why one other change I'd love to see in college football is stop with the preseason poll.
Oh,
okay?
Right.
Wait poll for position, one yeah. month of the season to play out and then do it.
All right.
Baker Mayfield kind of has a knack for rubbing his opponents the wrong way, and that was certainly the case in Oklahoma's stunning double overtime loss to Georgia. Now, Georgia linebacker Davin Bellamy accused Mayfield of antagonizing Georgia's wide receivers before the game, and there was some throat slash gesture as well.
Help yourself.
Oh,
Can't believe it's over. It's been a wild ride.
Do you think Baker Mayfield should take that advice and humble yourself?
Well, look, I think there's something to be said for it because you don't want to get that kind of reputation. And right now, I think while people love his edge, I certainly love his edge. I love his competitiveness. That there, he has to figure out a way not to cross the line. And I don't know if he's figured that line out yet. Obviously, he's had some other incidents this season with the whole crotch grab and all that other stuff. So it's like, can you work on your edge up to a point?
Here's where I'm not going to go. Where I'm not going to go, what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to have the instinct to compare him to Johnny Manziel. I don't see
Johnny
Manziel.
Yeah, a lot of people are doing that. I think that's unfair.
Here's what I see, though, the older I get. Sometimes you got to take advice. Let me preach a word for a second. Sometimes you got to take advice despite the circumstance and despite the presentation.
And
sometimes
for, it can be constructive criticism. Where it's coming from, too, right?
Exactly. So maybe Baker Mayfield might say, you know what? I can stand to clean up my act just a little bit. Doesn't matter that it got told to me in a loss. It's no different than somebody tweeting you something that, you know what, it might have been a mean way you put it, but you might have a point. That said, when your teammates are going to midfield with your jerseys, if you passed away, when you got suspended for grabbing your crotch,
like you want an airbrush picture at the club
exactly.
later on.
And, you know, for your own doing, you're not out at the coin toss. Clearly, his teammates like that bravado. Clearly, his teammates like his edge. They ride for him. They respond to him. And so that's something. If I'm an NFL team, if it's all about his draft stock, if I'm an NFL team, I like the way he competes. I like the way he plays. I like the way he performs. Is my man saying humble yourself when they down 31-14?
No.
Is he saying humble yourself if they don't win in double overtime? I doubt it. So,
well, let's also be a lesson is like, don't, you know, celebrate a little too early.
Yeah.
Getting back to this earlier story, Marvin Lewis is returning as the Bengals head coach. The Bengals announced that they have signed Lewis through 2019. Now, he has been with Cincy for 16 seasons, only 7 of which included the playoffs, but he is the winningest coach in Bengals history. Bit of an odd development because
everybody thought. It's Mike Brown. Not really.
As you see there, second longest active tenured head coach, only behind Belichick. And as I mentioned, most wins in Bengals franchise history. You see what that playoff resume looks like, too. But this is surprising. I know you said it's Mike Brown, and I know the Bengals and their history with Marvin Lewis, but this is really surprising.
It's surprising because you got your mind set on Marvin being up out of there, right?
Right.
Like you kind of were led to believe that this was going to be it. But how do you look at the way they finished the season, putting Buffalo in the playoffs by beating Baltimore? Mm. You can't say he's lost a team.
Right.
You can't say they don't respond to him. Now, the playoff record is what it is. I'm not here to make excuses for it. But remember what that franchise was before Marvin Lewis got there. And all of these teams nowadays are making change for change's sake. And unless you can definitively point to proof, I'm not saying mistakes he didn't make, but definitively point to proof that the reason for their playoff shortcomings rests with Marvin Lewis and his inability to coach in playoff games as opposed to regular season games, then why not stay the course with somebody?
But Mike, it's a long time. There's one thing between.
I didn't say it had to be a short course.
No. Because you know what they say. If you keep doing what you're doing, you keep getting what you're getting.
Yeah, that's the definition of insanity.
Right. And it's like sometimes even if a coach is good, you know, this covering the NFL as long as you did, is that sometimes the message, not that you lose the players, but something
it gets stale
and you just need fresh blood, new ideas, different people, something else. At some point, I'm not saying that Marvin Lewis is the reason why they haven't had more playoff success. He got them to a certain point of respectability, but maybe they need somebody else to get
them. But who's that somebody is my point. Unless you're telling me that the alternative is about to walk through that door and you got them all paid. Unless you're the Raiders and you didn't get John Gruden and you're going to let go of Jack Del Rio, who you just gave an extension to, more of these owners should stay the course. I'm actually pleasantly surprised at the fact that the Bucks kept Dirk Cutter, that the Browns at 1-31 are like, you know what? We haven't been completely fair with Hugh Jackson and the players we've given him. You could argue that. Bill O'Brien staying in Houston. Todd Bowles, Vance Joseph. Sometimes if you believed in the guy to begin with, I know we're talking about 15 years of Marvin
Lewis.
That's
a long time.
But if you believed in the guy to begin with, don't let the results cloud your judgment on me. Say, you know what? I'm not saying they don't matter. But tell me what the alternative is before you tell me we make a change.
Well, how do you know if you never look for it? Right?
Am I speaking to your soul right now?
No.
You got to determine that he's the problem first.
Well, you know he's not the solution.
Oh,
that's
okay.
For sure.
I'll let you have that.
Meanwhile, there was this interesting piece on ESPN.com ranking the best head coach openings in the league.
They got it right.
And I was really shocked that the Lions were one. It's like a small quibble, but I probably would have put the Raiders job first.
Matt Stafford. You got a question mark about Andrew Luck. Raiders is taken. Give me Matt Stafford. Still got a lot of good years ahead of him.
I think the Giants should have been hired, too. All right, in case you missed it, Isaiah Thomas will make his season debut with the Cavs tonight against the Trailblazers. He's been out recovering from a hip injury. Nevertheless, the Cavs, they'll start him off the bench tonight. But here's more from LeBron on how they plan to integrate him.
Don't know until we get out there and know what he loves to do. I watched a lot of film on him. I obviously played against him, you know, a lot over the last couple of years. So I know what he's good at, you know, and know what he does best. So, you know, it's very important for myself and us to see how, you know, he could be best for our team. He looked a little out of rhythm, obviously. The man hasn't played in the game in 7 months. I think anybody would be out of rhythm no matter what you're doing in life. He took 7 months off of doing what you do best. We expect him to be gassed. We expect him to, you know, just be very emotional about the whole, you know, just the, you know, his journey, just getting back. So, but as far as performance, we can, that's the last thing that we're thinking about right now.
Oh, I'm so excited for this national title game. I'm also excited.
No, you're not. You hate the SEC. I'm sorry.
Hate and love are very close.
But I'm also excited because Trevor Maddish, this is the first time we've ever used this on the show. So you'll have to make us smarter here with this telestrator and breaking down kind of some key points of what you see in this Alabama-Georgia game.
Well, I'll tell you this, Jamel, Alabama will be a different problem for the running game of Georgia than Oklahoma was.
No doubt.
Oklahoma's defenders didn't get the memo.
Right.
A lot. And so you take a play like this, for example, where you've got a whole bunch of little guys that are all slanting to this direction. And what that means is that this guy needs to slant in this direction too, but he doesn't do it. He doesn't get the memo. So he stays out there. So take a look at what happens. You get two guys in one gap, and you've got nobody where they're going to run. Now, I'd like to tell you that Georgia blocked a great job there, but they didn't. Oklahoma vacated the area. So Georgia fans, don't get too terribly excited. Now, I want you to take a look at this. Once again, Oklahoma doesn't get the memo. Quarterback, Jake Fromm, sees something. So he changes the play, but whatever did he see? Well, let's take a look at it from his perspective, and we'll see what he sees. He sees Oklahoma missing the memo. Now, if this guy comes up and fills that area, this guy should stay on this side. But that's not what happens. What happens is this guy drops, this guy fills on this side, so he should go over there, right? He doesn't. He stays here. And what ends up happening? The same thing. They don't stand in the right spot. They don't look at the right guy. And what we end up with...
A seal here and a seal here.
That's right. And it's just, this is what Oklahoma did for Georgia. And Georgia fans, they ran really well against Oklahoma, but they'll have a different experience against the Tide.
Well, especially now that Alabama, the defense is fully healthy. Those linebackers look great. So we know it's going to be a really tough matchup. Thank you so much for joining us and for breaking us in here on this telestrator. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you. It's fun.
Hey, you know what would be fun? A Browns parade for going defeated. 0-16, they're having a parade Saturday at First Energy Stadium. If I wasn't busy, I would go.
No, you would not go.
No, because I think, like, you got to celebrate yourself. UCF doing it. Go ahead. I'll celebrate joining the Lions in infamy. You know? What else they got to celebrate right now besides LeBron?
Like, who wants to celebrate being sorry?
Celebrate having 1-4. Maybe they should take 2 quarterbacks. Just make sure they get it right. I don't know. Let's celebrate the draft.
Meanwhile, with Isaiah Thomas returning tonight, he found some time to beef with a Celtics fan on Twitter. The fan called out the dude. He called out IT for having a huge ego for turning down a tribute video when he returns to Boston Wednesday. Instead, the team will save it for a later date when he actually plays. Now, he wanted to do it this way, IT, so his family and friends could be there.
Right, on February 11th.
Yes.
Makes total sense. But people will invent ways. It's like overboard. Like Kirk Russell told Goldie Hawn, overboard. You so bored, you invent things to complain about. It's like he didn't want a video when he wasn't going to be playing it back-to-back. Right. Can he not have this moment, given what he gave to the organization?
You would
people
think.
Find reasons to complain.
Yeah.
I'm not complaining about that picture with the caption. Peanut butter jelly with a glass with a juice box. Got a nice ring to it. Happy New Year.
Capri Sun.
Yeah, he's going to be great.
Yeah.
Maybe not tonight off the bat, but he's going to be great.
All this right, is not great.
Justice for Jews. Chimaeza Metu received a half-game suspension, stripped of his captaincy after going below the belt on Washington State's Carter Skaggs while attempting the shot. Half-game, he should have 2 halves. One for,
I wonder why you would say two. Yeah,
okay.
Yes,
there's no place for that. He's apologized. Y'all know how I feel about this.
Right.
Nice to see justice. Where's the justice? Come on, man. Come on, man.
All right, check this out. So Canada and Switzerland battled it out in the quarterfinals of the World Junior Championship earlier today. But first, let's flash back to Sunday when Swiss coach Christian Wawelin spoke to the media about his team's chances.
Canada in the quarterfinals, what sort of game are you expecting there?
Like a Canada team who dominates us again, and we try to hold against.
What did you learn about them in the pre-tournament game you played?
Learn that we are far away from them still. They're faster, they're bigger, they're stronger, they can shoot better, they can pass better, they can do everything better.
So is this what you'll tell your team? Like, what do you say to your team?
Exactly that.
I want to hear that guy's pregame speech.
Just keep it real.
All right. By the way, Canada won 8-2, so it wasn't far off. Anyway, speaking of losing, this has got to be one of the worst ways one could ever lose, I think, in life, not just on Jeopardy. But for now, let us show you this, number one.
A song by Coolio from Dangerous Minds goes back in time to become a 1667 John Milton classic. Nick.
What is Gangster's Paradise Lost?
Yes. And Lisa, I was about to say you have enough money to take the lead away from Nick, but you don't even have to respond to take the lead away from Nick because our judges have reevaluated one of your responses a few moments ago, Nick. You said gangsters instead of gangstas on that song by Coolio. So we take $3,200 away from you, so you are now in second place.
So this has been a big deal. Jeopardy released a statement explaining it. When did Al Riveron become a judge? Because he got at that slot.
Right.
Like, did that guy, do you think he says gangster? Do you think that guy does not pronounce every syllable, every word?
He meant gangsters paradise.
Come on, gangsters. Man. Like, I'm sorry.
I didn't know they had like a replay center for Jeopardy. Like, who knew this?
That was ridiculous.
And
he didn't survive the pronunciation?
He took so much pride in telling him that. Oh. As in, you lose, and here's why.
They're taking pride in DeMar DeRozan. In Toronto. Franchise record 52 points. Think about that. Franchise record 52 points. Don't forget the 8 assists. First player to ever score 50 on New Year's.
Well, actually, it's been beyond a great day for 49ers fans. It's been like a great month. And very encouraged by the fact that 49ers GM John Lynch said today that he wants Garoppolo, our new savior, to be with the organization a long time. So, Jimmy G, I've already fitted him for a Hall of Fame jacket, so it's all good.
It's a good day anytime you got a quarterback. Hey, let me be the latest to shout out Bills fans. We have a lot of fun with them. But how cool is it of them to give over $100,000 in counting to Andy Dalton's foundation after Dalton and the Bengals put the Bills in the playoffs for the first time since 99? Can't wait to see them this entire week and what they're going to do pregame for the playoff game they're not even hosting, but that's okay.
Right.
On the heels of everybody giving the Todd Gurley's foundation for the fantasy championships, he delivers. So shout out to you, the fan, for being so generous. That's it for the six. Big Ten College Hoops action is next. Wisconsin playing host to Indiana. We will see y'all tomorrow. No more vacation in time?
Nope. All right,
cool.